Just first of all, why are you running?
Well, I'm running because when I jumped in the special election 2 years ago, Rich, what I said is we need to focus on a couple things. The economy in particular, the economy in central and west central Illinois had been stagnant, had really been going backwards for the last 8 years. And I said if I was fortunate enough to win, that I was going to put a priority on how we get the economy moving again. How do we create good jobs, economic opportunities for people in our district? And I'm very proud of my vote and support for comprehensive tax reform. I think it helps middle and lower middle class people. And I think if you look now, you know, the economy is on the upswing. If you talk to farmers, if you talk to contractors, if you talk to large businesses or Main Street businesses, I think the economy is heading the right direction. Secondly, Rich, I also have put a real priority on constituent service. So whether you live in Macomb or Quincy or Peoria or Springfield, good constituent service, regardless of whether you're Republican or Democrat or independent, making sure when you call up our office, you're going to get the best service that you deserve. Doesn't mean we're going to solve all your problems, but we're going to get you an answer and we're going to help people. And we put a real priority on helping people. And then lastly, advocating for our district, advocating for agriculture, which is the number one industry in my district and the state of Illinois. And then also our companies and businesses, whether it's transportation projects, whether it's the locks and dams on our Illinois and Mississippi River, whether it's the farm bill that's coming up, being a strong vocal advocate for our district. And so for those reasons, I'm going to go before the voters again and ask for their support. And I don't take any election for granted. I come back every single weekend to my district, travel around. I tell people all the time, I have 710,000 bosses. And I never forget that every day in this job.
What would you say is the biggest challenge facing the 18th Congressional District, and how would you go about addressing it?
Well, I think two things. I think the economy has been a little slower to recover in Illinois and in our district. And looking at small and medium-sized cities, whether it's Macomb or Quincy or Jacksonville or Peoria, how do we, at the federal level, how do we create an economic atmosphere for more jobs and economic opportunities? So putting a focus on that is going to be important. Again, I think tax reform helps with that. We got to bring down the cost of health care. That's a huge issue for working class families, and creating those economic opportunities. Private sector growth is going to be important. Higher wages, bringing those jobs. And that also means being a strong advocate for our district, trying to bring businesses to central and west central Illinois, and working with our state legislators on improving the business climate. Secondly, I would say infrastructure. Making sure that we pass a good infrastructure bill, which I think can be a bipartisan issue. Good roads, good bridges are essential to West Central Illinois, and that has to be a priority. I've been a strong supporter of Amtrak. Making sure that we have the adequate resources there for Amtrak is important. So those are, as I look at this next year, those are the two things that I hope to focus on.
When you talk infrastructure, does that include, for example, broadband?
Well, I, first of all, it depends on how much money we have for infrastructure. The president talked last week about $1.5 billion. That's an awful lot of money. I think how you define infrastructure is going to be important in this conversation. Do you broaden it and include broadband? Listen, I think we ought to fund broadband. We need it in our rural areas. Should that be part of infrastructure? I don't know the answer to that because we need money for roads and bridges and for our locks and dams, for our rail system. There's plenty that we could spend on that. However, that doesn't mean we don't negate broadband. I think it depends on how much money we get for infrastructure and how broadly we define that. But there's no doubt that has to be a priority. I will also tell you, Rich, as part of the Farm Bill, which we will negotiate and vote on this summer, that deals with agriculture policy. You know, there's some talk about having rural broadband or resources as a part of that also.
Since you bring up the Farm Bill, we talked a couple of weeks ago about it, and you mentioned crop insurance as something important to you to be included in the Farm Bill. What are some of the other elements you would like to see in the Farm Bill?
Well, I think looking at regulations as part of the Farm Bill, you know, I've been working on a small provision with the Farm Bill that we call it the one-and-done provision. And so when farmers, every 5 years, when the Farm Bill gets passed, they sign up for ARC or a couple other programs, but they have to do that every year for the 5 years of the Farm Bill. Under our provision, which we hope to have in the Farm Bill, this would be you just sign up once at the beginning of the Farm Bill, and then you're done for the 5 years unless something changes with your farm. And we've gotten a lot of feedback from our farmers on that. It's a small provision, Rich, but again, I think it's indicative of looking at reasonable regulations on our farmers. Our farmers are the best stewards of the land, but we got to give them the opportunity to do that. And so I think, again, looking at reasonable regulations is a big part of that, and letting farmers do what they do best. And so that's another area that I think we'll be looking at also.
Do you think the size of the federal government should be smaller? And if so, where would you cut?
Well, the answer is absolutely. We're $20 trillion in debt, and we need to figure out how we bring that down. Now, you know, I think that comprehensive tax reform can help with that because we're going to get a growth rate up at 3 or 4%, and that means more people are going to be paying taxes, going to bring down the debt. That's how we've done it in the past. However, listen, I've been one that said I think we need to keep the caps in place on the defense industry. I'm a strong supporter of our national defense, national security. However, they need to be treated like everything else in the federal government, and we need to reduce the size of the Defense Department, you know, and I think there's many ways to do that. It's a huge, huge portion of what we do. And as we draw down in Iraq in particular, I think there's ways to cut back in our Defense Department. And then the second thing I would mention is, you know, there's been a lot of talk about with the economy doing as well as it is right now, Rich, you know, we've created 2.4 million jobs in the last 13 months. We have the lowest unemployment in our history, figuring out how we get more people working and off our welfare rolls. So we're not talking about our social safety net being affected, but able-bodied working people. And how do we transition them into good jobs? You know, President talked a lot about vocational skills in the State of the Union. I've been a strong supporter of that. How do we get career technical education? Moving people that are able-bodied working folks into the workforce, I think that's an important part of what we should be looking at. And that helps save taxpayer money if you got less people, you know, on Medicaid or on TANF or on food stamps, and figuring out, again, a reasonable approach on how we do that. I think that can help save money also. And then lastly, Rich, I think across the board cuts are the best thing we can do. Everybody has their pet project. Everybody has their, you know, their little special funding that they like to keep in place. And so I think the best way to do it is across the board. I've supported a number of our amendments to our appropriations bill that would cut 1% across the board. I think you got to look at stuff like that because no one wants to cut anything because they all have their little special funding needs.
Regarding moving able-bodied people off the welfare rolls and into jobs, do good-paying jobs exist for those people?
They do if they get the right training, Rich. That's why it's so vitally important to support our community colleges, whether it's Spoon River, whether it's John Wood, whether it's Carl Sandburg, or a number of other ones. We have to work with our community colleges to have the vocational skills. I'll tell you, the answer is yes, there are plenty of jobs out there. BNSF, for instance, which is based, their second biggest yard is based out of Galesburg. They have some great programs with John Wood and Spoon River Community Colleges where they get them the vocational training. those are the type of resources at the federal level we need to invest so that we can get people that are able-bodied working folks to go there, get those skills, and put them in good-paying jobs. Those are head of household jobs. So that's one example. Truck driving industry. There are lots of trucking companies looking for truck drivers, but you have to have the skills to do that. Nursing, another example. So there are sectors out there that are looking for people for these jobs. And if we can, again, focus on getting able-bodied working folks to get those skills, that will help all of us.
You bring up higher education. What role do you think the federal government should play in higher education and in K through 12 education, for that matter?
Well, I think for higher education, we have to look at how we reduce the burden of student loans, how we look at driving down the cost of young people wanting to go to college. You know, it's I've said this before, Rich. It's astonishing to me that it costs more to borrow to go to college than it does for a car loan, right? The interest rates that are charged by companies that loan kids money for higher education, we have to figure out a way to bring those costs down and make it easier for kids to go to college. That doesn't mean it's going to be easier for them to negate or get out of paying their loans. That has to be a part of it. But I think there's an easier way to be able to give money people the credit and the loan opportunities to go to higher education. So that's, I think, the first thing we can do there. Second thing on K through 12, you know, most of that is done at the state level. That is, you know, resources that are spent by our state through property taxes. I think we have a pretty good public education system as long as we can keep a budget in the state of Illinois. And where the federal government can help out is, I think, on some of the regulatory relief, some of the mandates that are put in place at the federal government. Again, that's why we have local school boards. That's why we allow people at the local level to make those decisions. I think the more we can do that at the federal level, the better.
Do you have a specific idea or plan that could help college graduates with their student loan debt?
Well, there's right now in the House and the Senate, there are a number of bills. I can think of four or five bills that are introduced that do that. I think trying to come to some consensus, I don't serve on those committees right now. However, I've been a strong advocate of looking at how we bring that down, how we structure that. And I'll tell you, Rich, you're going to go up against some of these companies and businesses that live off this and those special interests and lobbyists. And I'm committed to taking them on and making this a priority because they've been resistant to doing this. So I'm supportive of this effort. And by the way, this is a bipartisan effort, Republicans and Democrats, to do that. And so we have to put a focus on that.
You mentioned that's a bipartisan effort there. It does seem in general there is extreme partisanship in politics. Compromise seems to be a dirty word. Do we need to change that, and how do we go about changing that if you think it's time for change?
Well, I continue to be a strong advocate for a piece of legislation that I introduced with a Democrat, Dan Lipinski of Chicago. It's called the Congress of Tomorrow. And we now have about 80 to 90 co-sponsors on it, equal number of Republicans and Democrats, basically saying we have an idea on how you fix Congress. And our solution is to set up a reform committee called the Congress of Tomorrow, equally divided between Republicans and Democrats, to focus on how we fix the institution of Congress. How do we work better together? And I anticipate we'll have a vote on that this year, and we'll get us at least having the conversation. Right now, we don't have a committee that would do that. This would create a special committee. It's been done three different times in the last century. Last time was 1992. A lot of good reforms came out of that. You know, we have to figure out how we make Congress more effective, efficient, and accountable, Rich. And I'll also mention, Rich, I'm the co-chair of the U.S.-China Working Group with a Democrat from Washington. We work on a lot of trade issues. Very, very important bipartisan group. We got about 100 members on there. I'm also part of the U.S.-Cuba Working Group. Again, bipartisan working group. So I've tried doing my own time in Congress to reach out on the other side, find common ground, figure out where we can work together. But going back to the Congress of tomorrow, I think this is a way that we can, again, get members of Congress to work together more in a bipartisan way.
Can you tell us about one or two of the ideas that the Congress of tomorrow is exploring?
Sure. So, again, we don't really go into this with any preconceived notions that, hey, Congressman Darren LaHood says this is what we need. But what we've said, Rich, is everybody has an idea. For instance, changing the authorization process so Democrats have more say on the House floor, going more to a open process on the House, open, free debate, amendments can be offered, changing the appropriations process to bring more earmarks in. A lot of talk about that. A lot of talk about the Senate getting rid of the filibuster. Now, some of these are controversial issues, but what I've said is whatever your issue is, and there's about 30 of them that are out there. I just mentioned four of them. You know, another one is some people think members of Congress should spend more time on weekends or in D.C. together getting to know their families. Another provision is term limits, gerrymandering. So what we've said is let's create this committee, and then we would meet for 6 months to a year. Again, 12 House members, 12 senators, equally divided between Republicans and Democrats. Right now, we don't have a platform or a committee to do this. We think now is the time to do that, Rich, and have that conversation. And then what would happen is once the committee did its work, it would bring back a proposal of ideas that the whole House would vote on to do that. But this is, we believe, a step in the right direction to doing that.
Hey, what about term limits? Are you in favor of that?
What I've said is I think the appropriate amount of time to serve in Congress in the House would be between 4 and 8 terms. So that's between 8 and 16 years. And I've consistently said that, Rich. And what I mean is, what is the amount of time where you're not going to become a career politician, but you can go there and be effective. You can work on a committee. You can advocate for your district. And so I've said somewhere between 4 and 8 terms, I think, is the appropriate amount for members of Congress to serve.
Are you concerned at all about the role, the greater role that money seems to be playing in politics?
Yes.
It seems I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Yes. I think, it costs way too much to run campaigns. You're constantly raising money. So again, figuring out a way how we change that system it doesn't cost so much money and we're not, we're not so tied to fundraising.
Do you have any idea how much you might end up spending this year to hold on to your seat?
Oh. Well, right now we've raised about, a little short of $1 million. When I ran in the special election, Rich, I had 4 elections in 16 months. You know, it costs a lot of money. I have 4 media markets in my district. To get the word out and to get your message out there, that unfortunately costs a lot of money to do that. And so I've tried to put a priority on raising the majority of that money in my district from individuals. I'm fortunate to have a lot of supporters. But that's because, again, we come back every weekend and we, put a priority on trying to help the district. But I'm open to ideas on how we change our system. Now, remember, Rich, Citizens United came down and, that has basically said that, you can spend money you can spend money and corporations can spend money on what's called free speech, going out there and advocating for things. So the Supreme Court has taken a pretty firm stand on that. But I am open and cognizant that it costs way too much money to run campaigns.
Yeah. Do you agree with the Citizens United ruling?
I think the Supreme Court, if you look at their legal analysis there, They have put the First Amendment ahead of everything. And what they've said is if an individual wants to exercise their free speech rights, they shouldn't be prohibited from doing that. I'm a strong supporter of the First Amendment, and I think you got to be very, very careful on how you put infringement on the First Amendment. Again, I think there's ways to structure that without compromising the First Amendment. But again, people are very resistant to having taxpayer money spent on campaigns. I am not supportive of that, but I think there's got to be a reasonable approach on how you do that.
Why should someone vote for you in the primary?
Well, again, I think I think the most important part of this job is how you vote on issues. And when a primary voter goes in to look at my voting record, I think they'll see I've stood up for what I think is important: fiscal responsibility. I think smaller government, standing up for the free enterprise system, standing up for the Constitution, the core issues that I believe in, whether it's standing up for life or the Second Amendment, or those core issues that I think voters in our district believe in. Doesn't mean everybody's going to agree with me on those issues, but I think I have taken the votes that reflect the district that I represent. That's the first thing. Second thing is being a strong vocal advocate for our district, for our agriculture community, for our transportation community, for our businesses, for working people. I think I've had a strong record of doing that. And lastly, good constituent service. Regardless of your political affiliation, making sure when you call up our office, we're there for you to help navigate the federal government. Maybe you're a small business person that has a regulatory issue with the EPA. We help you with that. Maybe you're a senior citizen. Maybe you're a veteran. Maybe you need a passport. We put a strong priority on doing that. And listen, there are still challenges in this country. I'm honored to serve in this role. But I also know, again, I work for the people. They're my bosses, and I got to continue to work hard every day on their behalf.
That should do it. Thanks a lot for your time today. I really appreciate it.